Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, August 26th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, we got an email that I wanted to address at the top of the show from a listener named Lance saying that they were disappointed that we published a spoiler-filled conversation on the Friday of a movie's release. They were talking about Blink Twice specifically. The quote was, "I'm just not sure who would have had a chance to see the movie already, and it being a daily show makes it unlikely that I'll go back and listen once I see a movie. Wouldn't Monday be a better option for that to give people time to see it?" So I apologize to anybody who is disappointed with the structure of the show. That's, of course, your prerogative to skip the episode or not go back and listen to it or whatever. I'll just say that, like, I see these movies because I'm no longer in a market where they have pre-release screenings. Like, when I lived in LA, I used to see stuff at screenings all the time. But in Florida, where I am, screenings are not really an option. So I see all this stuff, on most of it, on Thursday night, like opening night. And I know that there are a lot of listeners to this show who do the same thing. So part of it is me trying to cater to, you know, that sense of what I like my podcasts to be, which is like hanging out with friends and talking about something that you just saw. I understand that doesn't apply to everybody, but just for structural reasons and like the way that the show is set up and everything, it just makes sense for me to do it this way. Also, we have interviews a lot of times pegged to the release of different movies, and there's sort of like either spoken or unspoken promises that we make to publicists to publish those interviews by a certain time. A lot of times that has to go up either by the like the week of release or something like that. So that's part of the reason why we don't often hold stuff until the next week. So anyway, all this to say, like, I apologize to anybody who is frustrated by that structure of the show, and I totally understand that. I would just say, ideally, you could just wait until you see the movie and then go back and listen to those episodes. So just for, you know, my purpose, basically, this is like a one-man show. Like, I produce and edit and do all the stuff with this podcast. And just for my own sanity, it makes a lot of sense for the show to be laid out the way it is. So I know that we've had some people write in saying that they love the fact that we talk about stuff on essentially the day of release. So yeah, I'm in a situation where I find it impossible to please everybody, but I did want to address Lance's email because I have heard that before. And I don't think I've ever actually talked about that on the show. So anyway, with all of that said, Ryan, let's go ahead and talk about the weekend's box office numbers. Do you want to open with a recap of the top 10?
Sure thing. So look, I will say before getting into this top 10, this is the worst week we've had in a while. You know, the sort of boom we had throughout June and July and the early part of August is kind of behind us. So we'll have to see how things go from here. But starting at number one this week, Deadpool and Wolverine returned to the top spot in its fifth weekend with $18.3 million. Movie's holding very well, but it's not necessarily a great sign with the last week of August. Your number one movie at the box office did less than $20 million. At number two, we have Alien Romulus, last weekend's champion, with $16.2 million. It dropped a slightly discouraging 61.4%, but, you know, it's doing pretty well overall, so nothing to be sad about there. Number three, we have It Ends With Us at $11.8 million, dropping just 50% in its third weekend. That movie is killing it. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Number four, we have one of the weekend's new releases, Blink Twice, the directorial debut of Zoe Kravitz, did a semi-respectable $7.3 million in its opening weekend. We'll talk more about it in a minute, but, you know, it's kind of just a okay. Number five was sort of a surprise, The Forge, which did $6.6 million in just over 1,800 screens, so it had a very respectable per-screen average. That kind of came out of nowhere. At number six, we had Twisters, still holding very well in its sixth weekend with $6.2 million, dropping just 38%. Same story as always, it's doing great domestically, but still struggling overseas, so, you know, the future of that franchise remains up in the air. Number seven, another one we talked a lot about last week, was Coraline. The 15th anniversary re-release continued for another weekend, made another $5 million, dropped just 49%, very respectable per-screen average, so that's kind of just crazy how well that's doing. And at number 8, the big one for this week, and we had the Crow remake, something that has been in development for like almost 20 years, did just $4.6 million on over 2,700 screens, an absolute disaster. We'll talk a lot about that in a second. Number 9, we had Despicable Me 4, which made $4.4 million on its 8th weekend of release. We are not going to talk about this one a lot more, but just for an update there, $348 million domestic, $537 internationally for $885 worldwide. That one might touch $900 million before it's over. So people love the Minions. What can I say? And rounding out the top 10 was Inside Out 2 with another $2.1 million. That one is the first animated movie ever to cross $1 billion internationally alone. And it is now at 1.64 million worldwide and has a very decent shot at overtaking The Lion King to end any and all highest grossing animated movie ever debates. So,
wow. Okay. So 1.64 billion worldwide. I think you said million there. I just want to.
Oh, well, yeah. 1.64 billion. Sorry. So The Lion King did 1.66 billion and change. And I understand saying and change when talking about numbers that large is a little ridiculous. But yeah. So I mean, it's going to be close, but Inside Out 2 might get there. And if Disney does some sort of re-release at some point, it'll almost assuredly put it over the top.
Wow. Okay. While you were talking there, you said The Forge, and I was like, I don't think I've ever heard of this movie. So I looked it up, and evidently it's like an inspirational film.
It's something like that. I hadn't heard a lot about it. I only looked into it this weekend after I saw what it kind of did. So it looks like it's kind of, I don't think it's a faith-based thing, but I think it's sort of going for that same audience.
Huh. Interesting. Oh, no. Wikipedia says it's a Christian biblical drama film directed by Alex Kendrick and co-written by Stephen Kendrick. So,
okay. So my research skills are great, but,
a spinoff to something called War Room.
That's okay. Yeah, War Room made a fair amount of money, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, I never heard of this, but as you mentioned, a strong per screen average, and you know, in kind of the doldrums of August here, there's opportunities for stuff like this to slide in to a pretty big slot. I feel like a lot of times some of these will just like sort of hover around like the 8, 9, 10 slots, but for a movie like that to open number 5, that, yeah, it seems like a kind of a big deal. But
just for context, I was correct. War Room, my memory served me well, $74 million against a $3 million budget in 2015. So
wow. Okay,
the very big sleeper hit that year.
All right, so where do you want to start here, Ryan?
I think we should probably start with The Crow, right? I mean, I know we're going out of order here, but that seems like what's probably at top of everyone's mind, I would assume.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into that.
Did you see it?
I did not see this one, and I frankly have no interest. As soon as I saw the first trailer, I was like, you know what, I'm just straight up out on this. I don't really have like a big relationship to The Crow as a media franchise. I know there's like comic tie-ins and all sorts of stuff, or was it based on a comic originally?
Yeah,
actually?
It started as a graphic novel. Yeah, yeah.
And I saw the first movie a long time ago, and you know, it was very, very 90s, but it's never really been a big one in my rotation. But what about you?
Yeah, I remember liking the original, but I think you and I talked about this a little bit ago, just sort of privately, that like it's a movie that I like the original, but I don't, it's not like top enough of mind for me to really have, you know, because I know some people truly love it, and I do get that. And I never saw any of the sequels or anything. And but yeah, so look, this is a remake that has been, and I'm with you. I think the one thing I will say, though, is that I'm with you. When that first trailer came out, I didn't care. But then I saw a fair amount of footage at CinemaCon, and some of the action sequences looked really cool. And I was like, oh, maybe, you know, like I thought maybe, you know, that early round of reviews was brutal for this one. So let's slightly deeper dive at the numbers here. It's 4.6 million on 2,752 screens for a $1,671 per screen average. That is bad. Now, Lionsgate is handling domestic here, but Lionsgate only paid like $10 million for the domestic rights. So, you know, they're probably not really going to lose money on it. Like, they're not going to make a lot on it, but they're not going to, you know, it's just another whiff for them after Borderlands. But this is kind of what Lionsgate does. They'll they'll sort of hedge bets, take chances. But this was a $50 million production. If you go to Wikipedia and you look up the number of like production companies and financiers that were involved, it's one of those like 11 title card sort of situations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that for some reason, that always seems to be kind of a bad sign. Like you just have to cobble all this money together. And, you know, so I don't know. So it seems like just a bunch of people are going to lose a fair amount of money. It doesn't seem like any one person is going to lose a fortune. It's one of those situations where, you know, overseas rights were sold. And so various distributors overseas have the rights to distribute it. But again, based on these domestic results, probably going to be limited appeal overseas as well. So, you know, it's not good. So like, no, it's not like a situation where it's like just Disney's going to lose a lot of money. Like, anyone who did this is going to lose money. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. I mean, I just doing research, we had articles on Slashdome going back to 2011 where there was a version where Bradley Cooper was going to star in it. And like some of that concept art is bafflingly terrible. And I don't know. It just seems like one of those cursed things. It's been in development hell for years. And I just assumed, I guess, maybe when Bill Skarsgård signed on, he seemed like a logical enough fit for the lead role. But I don't know. This just went so sour. And it's always hard for me to imagine how something sits this long, finally gets made, and somehow ends up this bad anyway. I don't really know. But it's definitely one of the bigger misfires of the year, I think it's fair to say.
I feel like I remember reading about this in 2008 or something like that. It really has been a long, long time. And I wonder, because of the lengthy development process and in and out and stuff, like people had to get paid for that. And all of that money, I think, ends up going into the finished movie's final budget. Like, I think all of that sort of, I'm pretty sure that's how that works, right?
Well, it depends. So if it's like a one studio handling it, sometimes yes. But that's also where some of these like costs for like movies get a little bit hazy sometimes, because you'll have like development costs, which aren't always reported in a budget. Whereas like, I think it was Pete Docter was talking last year about Pixar. Part of the reason their budgets are high is everything is included. So it's not just the production budget, but, I think with this, because it's changed hands so many times, like it wasn't always these financiers. It wasn't always like the rights lapse, different people. So I think like, along the way, those various people that have developed versions of it that never went, they just ate that money. And then that wasn't really like factored into this iteration of the project. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Yeah. I think
that's what happened. I'm not positive here, but because the rights have moved and different, like there was a version, if people don't know, in 2018, Corin Hardy, director of The Hallow and The Nun, and Jason Momoa were like, they were literally like about to start shooting. They were days away, meaning that millions had already probably been spent. And then it got the plug got pulled right then and there. So it's, yeah, I mean, someone has spent a fortune on this movie and saw nothing from it for sure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's all, that's where movie financing is. It's not an exact science, just because it's not like all these studios and financiers and money people want you to know every single detail about everything that's going on with this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Much of that was like absorbed by insurance and stuff too, you know, like sometimes you can write that stuff down or write it off or whatever. If things don't go according to plan, I guess it's all like contract language that we don't know about. So.
Sure. And yeah. And there are ways for people to sort of like, you know, businesses and business entities to sort of, you know, take it, you know, use it as like a tax write-off or something, as we've seen with the at the highest level at Warner Brothers with writing entire finished movies off. But, you know, that's another discussion entirely. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those situations where, I think like Jason Momoa is a big enough star where if that incarnation had gone, my guess is if that filmed in 2018, it maybe wouldn't have made it out in time before the pandemic really hit. So maybe it would have been sold to a streamer and kind of been a big hit on streaming. Mm. I just think Bill Skarsgård is more of an added value guy than he is like a butts and seats guy. Yeah. So I think like Rupert Sanders has made movies that have been hits for your, you know, sort of mass audiences, but clearly it didn't work here. You know, I don't know. It just, it's, and I mean, I think it's going to be fair to say this is a dead franchise now. Like, no one's going to try to do this again for, you know, I don't know. I think it's just, it's very evident this was a one and done thing. That 1994 version of The Crow was very much of its time, a perfect thing at the perfect time. None of the sequels have been well received. This was a disaster. Like, this is an example of Hollywood's worst sensibilities come to bear of just because something is IP means it has value. And that's not always the case. I'm not saying that people shouldn't love The Crow. I'm just saying that, like, as an extended franchise, it's never really made any sense. So,
yeah. And I think that is my biggest takeaway here from this movie's severe underperformance, is that I hope that studios are looking at that exact thing and saying, hey, just because people spent close to 20 years trying to remake this movie because it had some sliver of name recognition and was a piece of recognizable IP doesn't mean that the end result is going to be worth it at the end. So hopefully people are taking the right lessons from this stuff. But as we've seen time and time again, that doesn't always actually end up being the case. But
well, right. And I would say to that point is that, you know, I have an article going up kind of dissecting this a little bit more in depth. But one of the things I touch on is that this has been a thing for a while now, you know, kind of dating back to at least The Amazing Spider-Man in 2014, where you reboot a thing that had just finished its run. And, you know, like, it's the IP for the sake of IP thing. And, you know, we saw this earlier this year with The Fall Guy. And that was a movie that had extremely good reviews and a lot of people liked, but it was too expensive. It was based on a TV show people hardly remembered. And that IP proved to not mean anything. Charlie's Angels, Doolittle. I mean, the examples are near countless here. And so I don't know that Hollywood has taken this lesson, even though it's been offered many, many times. Yeah. So, you know, I do hope at some point it sticks, you know, because yeah, IP doesn't mean anything if it's just a name. And ultimately at the end of the day, the biggest thing is something has to be good. And I think if this movie had come out with, you know, very good reviews, it might have been able to leg out a lot better. The only other thing I would point out is that your number one and number two movie at the box office this weekend are R-rated movies within franchise that have a lot of good buzz on them, while your number four movie at the box office is an R-rated movie with bigger stars that has better buzz, if not great buzz. So, like, just a terrible weekend for this, too, like, competition-wise. Yeah. You know, even under the best of circumstances. So I don't want to beat up on this too bad, but this was kind of a big question mark entering the year. And, you know, here we are.
Yep. All right, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into the rest of the weekend box office numbers.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, what other stories jumped out at you from that top 10, Ryan?
Well, I haven't had a chance to dive too deep on this, but it is a little unusual that Deadpool and Wolverine jumped back to number one on its fifth weekend. And I'm not saying that, like, big hit movies haven't done that in the past, but for an R-rated movie of this level, I think it might be in sort of uncharted territory in that sense. But I mean, you know, it's now past $1.2 billion worldwide. It's going to pass Iron Man 3 today, I think. And in the next day or two, it will pass The Fate of the Furious to enter the top 25 all time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and it only dropped 39% this weekend. I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but I think under the very best of circumstances, we thought, hey, maybe this movie can, like, leg out to a billion. You know, like Jurassic World Dominion did, where it kind of limped to a billion by the end of it. But this is just, wow. And then also, you know, not to be lost in the conversation here is that Alien Romulus at number two, you know, the R-rated Disney era may be upon us here. You know, it is kind of fascinating that Disney is leading the way with not one, but two R-rated movies this weekend.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, the old Touchstone era, you know, like when Disney was more, I don't know, in the 80s and 90s, I feel like Disney was more open to doing stuff like this. Everything felt more siloed, right? Like, you have the Disney umbrella, but there were these offshoots where they felt like they could tell adult stories and stuff like that. And maybe general audiences wouldn't even have associated a Touchstone Pictures movie with the Walt Disney Company in any way or whatever. And so maybe that's what these 20th Century Fox movies can show and have shown, you know, since the acquisition, especially this year with stuff like The First Omen as well, where like, yeah, maybe there is an opportunity here for Disney to continue investing in a pretty serious way in R-rated movies for adults, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the big takeaway here, right? Is that like, you know, look, say what you will about, yes, this is within franchise stuff, I think is the concern. But like we talked a little bit about last week, if this opens Disney up to potentially do more things, experiment a little bit, you know, that would make the Fox acquisition a little more palatable. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to see how that goes. For right now, it's just more of a fascinating thing, I guess. Yeah. You know, to round up Alien Romulus here, yes, it dropped 61%, but it's already just almost at 73 million domestic, and more importantly, it's doing very well overseas, $152.8 million internationally so far. So a little over 225 worldwide already against an $80 million budget. So overseas audiences are showing up big for that one, which is pretty cool. So I think that, like, I would say it would be likely we're going to hear sooner rather than later about another one of these in development, because, I mean, even if it didn't make another dime, this would be sequel territory, but it's still got a lot of gas in the tank. So, I mean, you could easily see this thing touch 300 worldwide, you know, and I mean, that is almost impossible to imagine Disney saying no to another sequel with that. So,
yeah. Okay, so what else did you want to touch on here? Anything else with It Ends With Us or any of these other movies in the top five? Or, top 10?
It Ends With Us is certainly worth continued discussion here. You know, blame it on the controversy of it all, creating a lot of buzz around the movie or whatever, but it is at $242 million worldwide against a $25 million budget. It is almost a dead even 50-50 split between domestic and international. By the end of it all, you could make an argument that this is going to end up being the most profitable movie of the summer. You know, just in terms of budget times box office. And, you know, the only other things that come close are like Long Legs and Tarot, but those were sort of smaller potatoes, whereas this is going to end up like actually profiting a lot more, you know, like money in the end. So just an absolute home run from Sony. I mean, it's genuinely kind of crazy.
I wonder how much of, like, historically the end of August has been a true dumping ground for stuff, right? Like, I think this is one of the worst movie months of the year. Is that fair to say with your experience of tracking this stuff?
August is not so, it's August has the opportunity for like breakout hits, whereas I think like September and January have historically been like the worst. August is not always great, but yeah, that's it's bottom half for sure.
Okay. All right. I was hoping to get into a little bit of optimism here and say like, well, August is almost over. We're heading into September. That means like the fall movie season is about to start. But I guess that stuff, I guess you're right. That doesn't really start rolling out, now that I think about it, until probably beginning of October, for like awards stuff and whatever.
What I am saying is like historically, but I think what we've seen in somewhat recent years, and I've talked about this a little bit, is that like studios look at the summer being too crowded and you have to go, okay, where can I put a movie that might actually give it some breathing room? And that's why March has become a weirdly big month. And I think you have stuff like, you know, Bad Boys for Life breaking out so big in January. And I think you have stuff now, studios are looking at September. It doesn't have to be a dumping ground. So I think you've had stuff like The Hitman's Bodyguard being an example that I remember, and some of these other movies that have actually broken out in September. And I think this year, for example, we got Beetlejuice, which I believe is going to be one of the biggest hits of the year overall. So I think that has the chance to help make September, you know, like not like a drag of a month, basically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this week is a bit of a dull spot, and I think this upcoming weekend is going to be even worse.
Yeah, I think so. So I was just looking ahead and I was like, oh my God. So we'll have to talk about that in a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, this upcoming, but I think like, you know, then once you get to Beetlejuice, you know, it's kind of smooth sailing again. So, you know, you have this. This happens any given year. Even in a good year, you have sort of off weekends. It happens. After what happened earlier this year, it'd be nice to sort of have less of those. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I was looking at the release calendar, and I think the only movie that I would even be vaguely interested in that's coming out this week is called Afraid. And I think the A and I in Afraid are supposed to stand for artificial intelligence. It's like a John Cho thriller where Smart House comes to life and things go wrong or something. I watched the trailer once when it first came out, but I'm not going to be seeing this movie. But yeah, this kind of feels like maybe the start of a dumping ground kind of thing, where it seems like most of the studios just aren't putting stuff out at this time of year, maybe this week anyway.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think next weekend is one of those weekends where you're looking at, like, there must have been something to put there. Like, you could have maybe, I don't know, even like looking at how bad The Crow did this weekend, might it have fared a little better next weekend? You know, like, even so, I don't know. It is a little confounding at times, but you never really know how these things are going to shake out. But Yeah, it's definitely next weekend is the only thing I can think is Reagan has some opportunity to overperform a little bit, but I'm not sure to what degree. You know, I don't know, overperforming for that might be like, you know, 10 million, which is still not like enough to really lift the overall picture, I guess, but we'll see. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else before we wrap up here, Ryan?
The only thing I'd point out is that, I guess, since Blink Twice is new, you know, 7.3 million, is fine. It did 6.7 overseas. So it had a $14 million start against a reported $20 million budget, for a decently reviewed thriller, with, you know, big stars in it, like Channing Tatum, most notably, that will eventually go to Prime Video. I think that's fine. It will lift it to, it will eventually get to profitability. It's going to be okay. It's just not like one of those, you know, it could have been, it may seem like one of those possible late summer sneaky breakout type movies. It just isn't going to get there, which is sort of a bummer, but.
Yeah, Jacob was speculating in our Slack that this movie could be the equivalent of Saltburn that happened last year. That could be like this year's Saltburn, where the movie hits Prime Video and becomes a big deal and a big talking point and stuff, and people just aren't going out to theaters to see it in mass or whatever. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely possible. And I think that was a situation where, for one, Saltburn was more expensive than this. But I also think Prime Video in the end was probably happy with that result, because it did, you know, end up gaining some cultural traction. So I think that this movie could do the same thing, and for an amount where it could actually still reach pure profitability rather than sort of relying on weird streaming metrics to sort of argue that it got there. So again, it's one of those things that I think keeps the broader Amazon Prime Video MGM theatrical experiment in the black, right? Like, it keeps you in that situation where, okay, they'll keep doing stuff like this because it's sort of working, which I think is a net positive for moviegoers in the end, I think is sort of the thing.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about pretty much everything that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.